Overheard at Yoga is brought to you in partnership with Speak Studios and Speak Boise. Speak Boise is a community-driven studio space where voices from all walks of life can speak and be heard. You can find them on Instagram and Facebook at Speak Studios, Speak Boise, and at their website, speakstudios.com. Speak Studios, speak and be heard. This podcast is also brought to you by Instant Imprints. Promote better with Instant Imprints. Instant Imprints are Boise's visual communications expert and your place for everything you need to promote your business, club, school, or group. As a locally owned business, Instant Imprints specializes in making your organization more visible with custom branded apparel, embroidery, promotional items, print services, and wide format printing for signs as well as banners and vehicle graphics. Want better ways to get noticed? Visit Instant Imprints at instantimprints.com/Boise or call 208-IMPRINT. That's 208-467-7468. It's your girl, Christina. This is Overheard at Yoga. So let's crank up the heat and get down, dog. Hello, welcome back to Overheard at Yoga. This episode, I'm going to dive into preparing for hot yoga. So this is stuff that I wish I would have known when I got into hot yoga. And I think most people, when they're ready to take a hot yoga class, I want to say they don't do a lot of recon beforehand. They just kind of show up. I don't know about you, but if you are a yoga teacher and you're listening to this episode, how many times has a student come in late to class and they were ill-prepared, ill-equipped, and they're just trying to make it through? So if you have a friend who is thinking about doing hot yoga, just send them this episode. This is going to be a bite-sized episode talking about all things preparing for hot yoga. So first and foremost, if you listen to my first episode where I introduced myself, I told the burrito story. Was it a burrito? Was it a chimichanga? It was a lot of chipotle seasoning. So I made that mistake, which you make these mistakes, you learn along the way. So if you can learn from my mistake, don't eat a lot before going to hot yoga. You will be very uncomfortable. I thought I was going to throw up. I made the mistake of going to a 90-minute Bikram yoga class. And this was back when Bikram teachers were really militant and they would call you out by name and they would stand right next to you and like look you in your eyes, like very personal, and be like, you can do it, get up. So that was a little rough lesson. So if you're going to do a hot yoga class, I recommend no heavy meals before, just like you're going to go to the gym. So 2-3 hours, you probably don't want to eat anything. If you do eat something, keep it super light, maybe a protein shake, bit of oatmeal, couple eggs, something that's not going to make you have a heavy stomach. Because as I learned from my story, I had to throw away my yoga mat, I had to throw away my yoga towel because it reeked of chimichanga. I could not get that chipotle seasoning out because my sweat just destroyed it. So a little gross, but that's what happens. So next, you don't want to have a heavy meal. You want to be hydrated. So hydration for your hot yoga practice, it typically happens before and after class, because if you're in the middle of class and you realize, oh boy, I'm thirsty, you start chugging water. Same thing if you eat before class, you get kind of a stomach ache. You feel that and you hear that sound like, where's my water bottle? You get that sound in your stomach when you're trying to do yoga, and it's just uncomfortable. I don't recommend it. And because you will be sweating so much, you just want to feel like you are hydrated. I did want to also mention, if you go to yoga hungover, be careful. I don't know what it is, but it's almost like you are reactivating the alcohol that you drank the night before, and you can get a little drunk feeling. So that's a little dangerous. But if you drink water and coconut water with a hangover and do hot yoga, you'll feel like a million bucks afterwards. I do. Maybe other people don't. But that's one way that I would cure a hangover, is by drinking lots of coconut water. I feel like coconut water is known as nature's Gatorade. It's a really good hydration drink. And if you aren't hydrated and you do hot yoga, you can get into trouble, whereas you might get migraine, headaches. If I get too hot, I get a migraine or a headache. So being hydrated, taking electrolytes really helps me feel prepared for a hot yoga class. If you are sweating a lot and you grab your hand towel and you're just wiping your sweat profusely, basically your body's job is to sweat. So once you start sweating, your body begins to cool down naturally. If you wipe the sweat, you're not cooling down. And now the body has to re-sweat again. Does that make sense? Maybe don't quote me on the science of this, but then you're going to sweat even more and you're risking dehydration. So let yourself do one single sweat. Don't wipe off the sweat. Let your body do its job. What to wear? This is really important. I'm going to tell you what not to wear. There was a really nice guy who would come to my classes and he wore tidy whities. So he would, I don't know if these were like workout shorts or straight up his chonies, his underwear, but he wore what looked like tidy whities and he would go in the front row and sweat and they would be see-through. And I didn't really know what to say at the time. I think I was a new teacher and just like the difference is that I'm a girl and he's a guy and he's a little bit older than me. I just felt weird being like, yo, bro, I can see everything. You shouldn't wear a white. I didn't really know what to say at the time. So I was a little passive and I had decided to order men's yoga shorts to the studio. I ordered from Manduka. So Manduka is really high quality. And price range is probably around $60. And so I had these Manduka men shorts. So when he would come in, I'd be like, hey, we got these new shorts in. They're really awesome. They're fast wicking. Like, it'll keep you dry. Like, these are great shorts. And he's like, oh, cool. Well, I'm good. I got mine. And I didn't know how to say, like, no, don't wear those. And so I even, I offered him like a crazy discount just to get him to get those shorts. And he didn't get them and he ended up moving away. But I think now if I were in a scenario, I mean, you'd want to know if your shorts were see-through in class. So yeah, don't wear white. Don't wear tidy whities if you're a gentleman. It's not going to work out. Another thing not to wear are baggy shorts. So ladies, I don't recommend it. I had a really packed class once and this young girl comes in and she was wearing a really cute outfit, but it wasn't an athletic outfit. Like it was like a cute little halter top and these matching shorts. It was super cute, but I wouldn't recommend a hot yoga class in that outfit. And there was only one spot left and it was right in front of this couple. A husband and a wife had come to yoga together and she goes right in front of this couple. And we realized pretty quickly that her shorts are really open and baggy. And I don't think she had anything on underneath them. And the husband's face was slightly horrified and he didn't know where to look because she's right in front of him. He didn't know where to look. He's trying not to be disrespectful because you can see everything and I could see everything. And the wife was laughing because she knew how uncomfortable her husband was. And it was this young girl. I want to say she was like 19 or 20. So wear clothes that fit and that keep you covered. Although I don't know what happened. There was a teacher who taught at another studio that I worked at, and she said she had a woman come into class, and as class progressively got hotter, she took off her shirt, which we all do, take off our shirts, whatever, but she didn't have a bra underneath her shirt, and she was topless, but she's also European, so I'm wondering if there was, like, just different rules in different places where, I don't know, I think Oregon, you can be topless in a park as a woman. And I know that it's not fair gender-wise, but I think just in our yoga community, I don't know. I I don't recommend being topless. I don't recommend wearing see-through clothing. Gosh, Lululemon had that problem for a long time. All those black leggings were see-through. They did a recall. And I remember being a part of a flash mob. We did a Lululemon flash mob where we all wore black leggings that were not see-through. And we walked across the street downtown, covered like two blocks, and we all held up a sign that said, "Back in black, not see-through," something like that. It was really funny. So when you're purchasing leggings, do the see-through test. Bend over, look in the mirror, is it see-through? And I've seen a lot of stuff from those see-through leggings in class. And I do have a pair of leggings that are a little bit see-through. So if I have to wear those leggings for some reason, I'll purposely place myself in the back row, in a corner where no one's going to accidentally see all my goodies. So clothes that aren't see-through, clothes that don't show all your goods. And if I'm going to be a little snotty, I do love Lululemon for sweating in. And Tiki and Neomasole leggings. Tiki and Neomasole are really similar because their leggings are made out of recycled plastic. And it's just like a second skin, and it dries instantly. So after hot yoga, if I don't have time to take a shower right away, I'm not going to be sitting in my wet leggings, which I love my Lululemon leggings. They feel great, but they don't dry the way Tiki and Neomasole do. So usually, like, I teach a class, I sweat, I run back to the desk, and for the next, like, half an hour, I'll be checking people out, greeting the next class, like cleaning the room, and I feel super comfortable. So I'm not just like walking around in my wet, sweaty clothes. What else? Yeah, I think that about covers what to wear. You want to wear something you feel comfortable sweating in, period. If you're wearing a baggy, wet t-shirt made out of cotton, that's no fun. So choosing material that's fast drying, breathable, that's definitely my recommendation for you. Some guys feel uncomfortable taking their shirts off in yoga, and I feel like, you're a guy, you can get away with it. Like, that's awesome. Enjoy your privilege. Take your shirt off. Today, I think I wore Lululemon shorts and a sports bra. I did Lydia's sculpt class, and I had really high hopes for this class because last time I did her class, I was really impressed with how well I did, because normally I do so bad. And I'm like, you know what? I want to wear shorts and a sports bra, and I'm going to get after it. And I died in the first 30 minutes and had to lay down the whole time. But it gets so hot. And if I get too hot, I get those headaches. So I'm trying to wear something really comfortable, really fast drying, that's not going to be really heavy and cotton covered in sweats. What do you bring to hot yoga? So great question here. Some people show up, they're just like, I'm here, I'm ready to do yoga. Now what? Most studios have rentals available. Some don't. In this post, still in, I guess we're still in COVID, but in like the COVID world we're in now, that's not really available. I recommend having a yoga mat, having a towel to go on top of your yoga mat. That way when you start sweating, you don't start slipping and sliding all over your yoga mat. And teachers, if you have a student in your class who forgot a towel and you see them struggling because they're so sweaty and they're slipping all over the mat, grab them a towel. You can make the time to run out real quickly, grab a towel and hand it to them. If you're at a studio where you don't have rentals and you don't have towels, that's too bad. I think everyone kind of has to learn that lesson. There's these lessons that you learn as you get into hot yoga. You eventually learn, I'm probably going to need a towel because that was so awkward not having a towel. A shower size towel, like a large towel to go over your yoga mat. And have a yoga mat that fits you. For me personally, I feel like I'm super tall, so I need a little bit of a longer yoga mat. I've seen guys come in with like these tiny little kid size yoga mat, and they're struggling. So they can't even fit their full downward facing dog on the yoga mat. So then they have this version of down dog that just doesn't fit. It looks really uncomfortable. Although there is a gentleman who does come to my classes sometimes, and he has like this huge yoga mat. I wonder if he got it from Manduka, because I think they have a family size yoga mat. And a couple of the guys, I can hear them from the locker room. It's right around the corner from my desk. And they're like, whoa, I love your yoga mat. So big. Where'd you get that? Because it's just nice to have that extra space. So having a proper yoga mat that feels good to your body size is awesome. Some yoga mats are really, really thin, and that can be painful for your knees. So it's good to check that thickness. If you're doing hot yoga specifically, which is what we're talking about in this episode, your mat may or may not absorb all that sweat. So kind of think about that. Some mats, they say, are created for hot yoga, so you don't need a towel, but then it's like, gross, now that mat is just soaking up all the sweat, and now how do I clean the mat? It's a whole thing. So if you are new to hot yoga, call the studio, see if they've got rentals so you can use proper gear, because they usually have good mats and towels. But if they don't, I don't know. That's too bad. I really like Lululemon's mat. I really like Manduka's Pro Light. They have a Eco Pro, which is what I use, and that's really nice. I don't often need a towel. Maybe I'll throw my towel on halfway in the middle of class, because then I'll start to get sweaty. But the Eco mat is kind of sticky, so then I feel like I'm staying in place. In fact, I stay in place so much that I feel like I'm adjusting more in Warrior 2 than I would in my Lululemon mat, because it was easier to slide my feet into place. Whereas with my Eco Manduka mat, my feet stay where they are, which is awesome. But then if I need to make those slight adjustments, it's not like a quick adjustment. I'm like really adjusting. Does that make sense? So yoga mat, yoga towel, and water. It's nice to have water with you. There was a student who would come to classes who would never bring a water bottle, and he would come out to the water fountain multiple times during class. It was really disruptive. But I mean, if you need water, you need water. And I definitely recommend bringing water to yoga. Hopefully you're hydrating before class. Hopefully you're hydrating after class. And you just never know. Just in case, have water with you. Again, you don't want to chug water while you're in class, but having it nearby can make you feel safe. And again, yoga teachers, if you have a student in class who doesn't have water and they're new, grab them a water from the lobby if you guys sell water. It's just really helpful, and it's good rapport. And I think I had a student graciously thank me. They're like, I totally forgot water. I didn't know what to do. I was dying. Thank you for bringing me water. It's nice to have. And for those of you who like to add an extra element to your yoga practice, I recommend bringing a crystal, a stone that means something to you that you can use for your meditation practice. Maybe you have a really special necklace. I have a necklace that has all the colors of the chakras on it, and it has an Om symbol. And I really like that necklace for my yoga practice. So when I get to my mat, I'll take my necklace off and I'll set it at the top of my yoga mat. And I just kind of feel like I'm building good juju. I'm putting good energy into this necklace. And so when I wear it, I'm like, oh, that's the necklace I had in my yoga practice, where I was focusing, doing my meditation practice, doing my deep breathing exercises. So if you'd like to add a little extra element to your practice, bring a totem. Some people have brought full-blown altars. That's your choice. People have brought feathers. That's a little extra thing that you can bring to your practice to make it unique to you. Mala beads, mala necklaces are really famous for that. And I like to think of mala necklaces. Those are those beaded necklaces that have 108 beads on them. They kind of remind me of the rosary. So I think Catholics, I'm not Catholic, by the way, I think Catholics would take their rosary and they, for each bead, they would say a little prayer. Same with the mala beads. Each bead represents part of your intention, part of your affirmation or your mantra, if you have a mantra practice. And then you go through the 108. 108 is meant to be a spiritual number as well. And I couldn't really tell you why. I think we can go into a whole other thing on that. I think I'm going to talk to somebody about that in another episode. Stay tuned for that one. And, also, I definitely want to talk about arriving to your yoga practice. So like I said at the beginning of this episode, you've probably been that person. I've been that person where you're like, cool, yoga's at 4. I'll show up around 4. I'm new to yoga. I don't really know the etiquette. I don't really know the rules. So I get there at like 4:03 and they're in the middle of some breathing exercise. I don't know what's going on. I walk in late and the teacher full blown snubs me. I feel like, oh no, I've disrupted class. And then I don't want to go back. I don't know if I've mentioned this story before. I think I have, where I was living in Seattle and there was a yoga studio immediately around the corner from my apartment. And the first time I went there, I was late and I was a dollar short after class because I didn't realize it was a cash only place. And the teacher was super rude to me for being late and for not having enough money. And she's like, well, bring your dollar next time you come. And I never came back because I just felt like I didn't belong there. I felt like I wasn't wanted. So teachers, if you do have a late student, it happens, especially when you're new and you don't realize how disruptive it is when you're late to class. Because the beginning of class is where we do our meditation, our intention setting, our deep breathing exercises, and we're trying to get the class all in the same wavelength. So if you're coming in late, if you're unrolling that loud, obnoxious, sticky mat, if you're knocking over your water bottle, or specifically in hot yoga, people will bring little spray bottles to get their towels the perfect amount of wet before class. If we're in the middle of our meditation intention setting and you just hear this squirt bottle going off, it's so distracting. Try to be on time. If you have a new student who does that, be compassionate as a teacher. We were all new once. No talking. This is something that's really important to talk to your students about before class. So if you have an opportunity to catch a new student before your class, you'll want to let them know there's no talking in your class. Now, every studio is different. There's so many different styles of yoga. But as I've learned in the hot yoga world, most of the time, the beginning before class is used for meditation. So if you are thinking about starting a hot yoga practice, come a little bit early, and then you can use that space to set up your mat, put up your little crystal or totem, start to adjust to the heat in the room, because acclimating to the heat is the most important part. Once you get acclimated to the heat, then you start to focus on the breath, then you start to focus on the postures, then you can start to hear the teacher's cueing. So if you can arrive a bit early, start the acclimation process. Talking can be really distracting in class, and most people don't realize that you can't talk in a class. So if you don't introduce the rules to your student before class, they don't know. They look at their friend and they're like, why did you bring me here? It's so hot. And they start having a little chit-chatty moment, and the students around them who are working on their pranayama, who are trying to meditate or focusing on a balancing posture, they can get really irritated because who knows what day they've had and they're coming to yoga to chill out. And now somebody's chit-chatting next to them while they're trying to do yoga. As a teacher, you hate to see your students get irritated with one another because you want to create this cohesive space. So as long as you prep your students beforehand, that helps. However, say you don't have that opportunity because someone like me in the past rolls into your class late. As a teacher, you could just be like, shh. Or if you don't feel confident shushing a student in class, because you want to feel like a welcoming vibe. You want to create a welcoming vibe specifically for new people. Like, it's hard enough trying something new without having a teacher be irritated with you because you didn't know the rules. So as a teacher, what I do is if I have a disruptive, chatty student, is I will stand awkwardly close to them and stare at them. And then they kind of look at me and they're like, oh, okay. Some teachers have recommended stopping the class and putting everyone in a child's pose and saying the intention for the class as a whole again. So oftentimes I'll say, this is our meditation practice. I took a yoga class at a studio in Utah, and I really liked the way the teacher framed it. He said, this is sacred space. There's no talking in this space. We don't wear shoes in this space. This is sacred ground for our yoga practice and for our meditation practice. And I thought that was such a cool way to present the rules of the room. Plus, if you're new to yoga and you don't know the rules, it can be really embarrassing if somebody chastises you because you didn't know the rules. As a teacher, you want to set the students up for success. So I had somebody come in who was new. They were excited to take a class, and I forgot to mention the no talking rule. And one of the students who was set up in there for meditation before class walked over to that student and said, "Hey, there's no talking in here." And that student felt unwelcome. And I felt really bad that I hadn't prepared my student to be successful and have a welcoming experience. So that's something that I recommend teachers try their best to prepare their students for. And if you're trying to bring your friend to yoga, keep these rules in mind as well and share them with your friend. I've had a lot of disruptive students, and I want to preface disruptive students. I'm not mad at you. You're not a bad student. And honestly, I think most students don't feel the disruption. I think it's the teacher. The teacher has a heightened sense of awareness of their class. They feel the energy in the room, and they can be distracted easier than the people practicing, because the teacher is meant to lead the practice instead of focusing on their own thing. So new teachers, I think, get really irritated by a disruptive student because they don't realize that they're probably the only person being disrupted, not necessarily the whole class, if that makes sense. I had a really fidgety student once, could not hold still. She was constantly adjusting her hair, adjusting her shorts, her sports bra. She would wear a long sleeve, tight fitting top, and she had to like straighten out the sleeves constantly. And I remember standing right next to her and just saying, "We're going to be still." She couldn't do it. And as a newer teacher at the time, I was like, "What the hell? Like, be still. You're so distracting." And as I've been practicing and teaching yoga long enough, I started to understand that being unable to be still is also, maybe not, but it's also, it also shows trauma. So if you have experienced trauma, being still can be very difficult because now you're being faced with the thoughts in your mind. It can be really hard. So as teachers, it's best to have compassion for the students who struggle to have stillness. Loud breathers. I don't want to talk smack about loud breathers because it's all about breathing in yoga. Sometimes, though, you'll have someone in class, and particularly a gentleman, he sounds like he's at the gym pumping iron. He doesn't sound like he's taking a yoga class. And some people come for the physicality of it. They're not coming for the full dimension of mind, body, breath. So you can see some guys in there who are just taking no breaks. They're doing 50 chaturangas in every flow instead of just one per flow or skipping a flow. And they're huffing and they're puffing. So that's so annoying. Don't do that. Oh my gosh. I was reading on, it was like Overheard in LA, and they had an Overheard in Yoga post that a teacher had said, "Hey, whoever sounds like they just snorted a big line of cocaine, stop breathing like that." I would never say that, but I knew exactly what they were talking about. And every studio is different. I've been to studios where they really encourage audible breathing. They encourage sighing. I was listening to, what's his name? Wish Lydia was here right now. I would ask her. She listens to a lot of his podcasts. The Yoga Land podcast. Jason Crandall. There it is. So I was listening to Jason Crandall's podcast about disruptive students. And he said that he had some students who would just sound like they were really enjoying themselves, like deep moaning, high-pitched sighs. And he was so distracted that I think those are the only people he really spoke to after class and was just like, "Hey, that's a little distracting." But some studios, which I've been to in New York, really encourage it. And the teachers will be like, "That's not good enough. Let's do it again." And then get everyone to do it. So it really just depends on the space you're at. I know sometimes I think it's just the huffing and puffing that can be a little irritable if the yoga practice feels like it's, I don't know. Do you get what I'm saying? I think if you've been in that class, you know what I'm saying. And mostly the teacher hears it more than the students. Gosh, I can just go into a whole episode about the disruptive student. Maybe you have somebody doing their own thing. I teach a beginner class, and if I have a yoga, like an advanced yoga student come to my class, I'm like, why are you here? This is for beginners. You're doing your whole thing, and it's so distracting to beginner students. I had a teacher who used to teach at our studio, and she took one of my beginner classes, and she goes front and center, and she does her own thing. And one of my rules that I would tell all the students who would come to my classes, I recommend being in the back row so you can use the front row as an example. And that used to be really popular in a lot of hot yoga classes. So we go into the class and I see that there's a teacher front center. I'm like, great, there's a teacher in here that's gonna really help out all the new students in the back row. She just does her own program, totally off script. And all the new students who I spoke to before class, because I'm trying to be a good teacher and prepare them for class, they look to her and they start copying what she's doing, which has nothing to do with what I'm saying. And that is really frustrating. And I did pull that teacher aside after class and tell her, I understand what you're doing, but this is not the time or the place. That's something as a teacher can be hard to deal with. If you're going to take a yoga class and do your own thing, fine. But maybe don't be front and center doing it. Maybe don't do that at a beginner class either. And typically, if I have that type of student in my class, they don't usually come back because they realize like, oh, this isn't the right class. So it's not usually a big deal. I forgot about this. I had a friend. So I have a friend. And she, when she got really into yoga, she started bringing her friends to yoga. She was so excited to share this practice that is yoga. And she would bring them to my classes. And I was like, that's awesome. Thanks for bringing your friends to yoga. But as we would be going through class, she would constantly like be on her friend, correcting them. Every friend she brought, like she'd bring a different friend all the time. And it was their first yoga class ever. And she would focus so much on what her friend was doing and correcting her friend. I just like, at the time, I didn't know what to do or say. A part of me wanted to say, let them have their own experience. It's their first class. Cut them some slack. They'll get it in time. Let me be the teacher and allow yourself to be the student. But I wonder if she's listening to this. Anyway, and so as a teacher, I would just say, if you have these disruptions, it's probably not a big deal. I think when I was newer, I would get really upset and really frustrated. Sometimes even now, if I catch myself being frustrated, I know that's something I need to look at and it's best to walk away. The most important thing is if it's a safety issue, if you feel like they're going to hurt themselves, that's when you intervene. Otherwise, let it go. It's a great practice and mindfulness, focusing on yourself. It's good practice for the other students. How can they focus on their own yoga practice? I get you don't want your students to come to class and be super distracted by a disruptive student, but usually just explaining the rules before class or setting the intention at the start of class or even putting everyone back in child's pose and reiterating the intention for class can really get the job done. If it's not getting done, that's fine. Just like some students come to yoga with really tight hips or tight shoulders, some students start coming to class with a lack of self-awareness. And that just happens in time. And as yoga teachers, we don't need to be upset about that. It's just part of the practice. And I would have to say, out of all my years of teaching, hundreds of classes, hundreds of students, I only had one student cancel her membership because she couldn't handle the distractions in class. And it was kind of interesting because No offense to Bikram yogis or Ashtangi yogis. That's a whole other game. And it can be really militant and strict. But she started loving the classes. And then she felt like the classes had too many students in them. And then she felt like the music wasn't right. And then she felt like there's too many distracting students in class. She started bringing her daughter. And her daughter was young and new to yoga. And then her daughter started complaining about the classes, really taking after her mom, I felt like. And it got to a point where I knew if she was coming to my classes, I just had to be prepared for a list of complaints. And at first I felt like, okay, how can I make her have a comfortable experience? Meanwhile, at the time, pre-COVID, there's 30 other students in the room and I can't be focusing on one student. I need her to do the yoga and find that out for herself. By the end of it, she did decide to cancel her membership because it just wasn't the right fit for her. And that's okay. And if that's the only person who canceled because they felt disrupted in yoga out of 8 years and hundreds of classes, I think that's okay. That is it. Hopefully this was a bite-sized little podcast preparing for yoga, hot yoga specifically, and a little bit about the etiquette of hot yoga. If you have any questions, you can always shoot me an email, follow me on Instagram. Thanks for listening, guys. Have a great day. Bye. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Leave me a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and I want to hear from you. Please send me your overheard at yoga stories. Tell me about your yoga journey, what you love about your home studio, or the funny thing you overheard at yoga. Find me on Instagram at overheardat.yoga to submit. There are so many different styles of yoga and opinions about yoga, but the one thing I've seen in all my travels to different studios is yoga brings a community together. Namaste!